You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
In my head, those little gates that are supposed to, you know, scan the product that you shop with or whatever are like transformers, and they turn into the bad robot from the original RoboCop, and they just
freeze. This is code 1445. Violation of Sector 5 product enhancement. Freeze or you will be shot.
That's awesome.
Also, I used to think everything would turn into that robot. So maybe that was more of a me thing than a shoplifting thing.
Here we are speaking to the kids again, talking about RoboCop. No,
remember original RoboCop kids? You guys in your 20s remember that movie, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
When was that? Had to be mid 80s, right? I'm guessing.
1987. Oh, yeah. No, that's one of my favorite. That's another favorite of mine. Peter Weller and what was his name? Kurtwood Smith, obviously.
Yeah. Kurtwood.
Miguel Ferrer. Miguel Ferrer played Bob Morton. The up-and-coming Bob Morton.
The woman in that was kind of, she was a little rough.
Which one? Nancy Allen?
Hey, yeah, the one with the blonde curly hair. Yeah. She was a little tough.
Nancy. No. Do not slander the amazing Nancy Allen.
What about Ronnie Cox as Dick Jones? Remember Dick Jones?
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, that's a phenomenal movie.
The millennials right now are loving this.
Oh, who doesn't love some Ronnie Cox discussion?
Nancy Allen was one of my first big crushes.
What?
From the movie 1941, 1979, John Belushi.
Yeah.
Terrible movie.
Steven Spielberg.
Yep, it was. Sure. It was awful and it bombed. But she was hot, and it was the perfect age for me to appreciate.
You were being serious. I thought you were being facetious about Nancy Allen. You actually have You got a soft spot.
I didn't have a soft spot.
Mm. I had a similar soft spot to an actress who kind of looks like her a little bit. I was really into Courtney Thorne Smith when she was in Summer School, the Mark Harmon vehicle.
Yeah.
And she's also in Melrose Place, and for some reason, I found her to have that girl next door vibe. Not too similar,
Summer
just
school.
Similar from Nancy Allen.
Here's one that over time did not. Cheers era Kirstie Alley. That was one of my earliest ones. That was the thing. Cheers era Kirstie Alley was like, yeah, no, I see it. And then, well.
Yeah, Veronica's Closet, Kirstie Alley.
What can you do? Life's hard sometimes.
Yeah, stuff happens, man. Things happen.
Things happen. Not a lot of things are happening for Los Angeles Rams fans. It's Tertia Radio. What are we at? Is this actually episode 51? Is that accurate? Or was this at 52?
Well, I mean, I made a cake that has 51 written on it. So do I have to throw away this celebratory cake?
Do you make a celebratory cake for every podcast?
I do. Is that weird?
No. It would be weird if you didn't.
Is that part of the Augie and Daddy show?
Exactly. We just eat the episode cake.
Well, no, this will be episode 52. It's your boy, Joe, at 3K underscore. Robbo, at Seattle Rams underscore NFL. Hello, Robert.
Hello, sir.
Joseph O.coin, LA Rams, Rams.
Is this
Rams,
the episode?
Is this the
is
episode?
Is this the gentleman episode?
We're saving that. That's to come. That's a spoiler.
You have to be a Patreon subscriber
You have to subscribe to our Patreon.
The old English version.
No, I want to save that until after the draft when we get into the depths of the darkness that is post-draft offseason.
Oh, you want like post mini camp before it's, training camp. Like we have that six weeks of doom.
That's when true gentlemen listen to podcasts. Joey, what's our intel report on the city of Los Angeles for this week? What do we need to know?
Well, there might be floodings. It might be a massive storm. The LA Times had an article yesterday about how there could be this crazy 3 week long storm that could flood some parts of the San Fernando Valley, but they're talking about like Norwalk and areas like that could be completely submerged, that you could, you know, like a million people could be affected. And so it's pretty crazy because Southern California, especially Los Angeles County, is like not built to withstand massive amounts of water. That's one thing we don't worry about too much. And I think we're about to get a lot.
One of the things I liked about the 3 week rainstorm article is that, and this is one of those things, and obviously with climate change, I think we're going to see it continue, is most of the biggest cities in the country have these like worst case scenario natural disasters where, you know, LA is worried about earthquakes and 3 week rainstorm, and Dallas is worried about tornadoes. And I'm sure there's something that a tsunami that could hit Seattle, and New York is
snow.
Oh man, you might get snowmageddon. Snow. Miami.
We might get 2 inches of snow.
You get hurricanes in the Southeast, and everybody's got these. I'm kind of hoping like over the next 10 years, people start getting desperate and like cities in the interior start coming up with their own like fake natural disasters. Like, what's the worst thing that could happen in Kansas City, Missouri? Oh, you never know when you get that big wind storm coming in, just to pushing things around. We could get that 3 week wind storm.
Well, Joe, I don't know if you read the news, but if you aren't scared, you're not paying attention, because they want to just scare you every day. It's awesome.
What's the worst thing that could happen in beautiful Charlotte, North Carolina? Oh, we could get them trees. You ever heard about a tree falling? Oh, you get hundreds of trees just a falling all over. It looks like a Lincoln log cabin laying on top of you.
What is the worst thing that happened to Charlotte? A hurricane comes through. By the time it hits them, it's like a tropical depression, right? I mean, it's not going to be an actual hurricane in Charlotte. So they have some wind and some rain. Is that truly the worst thing that Charlotte can ever have?
You ever heard of the old Caroline pollen bomb? Oh, they're the worst.
Do they get locusts? Do places still have locusts? Oh, no. Expect locusts. Maybe that's what they can get. Or Kansas maybe can get locusts.
Open up your imagination and you'll find a way that a bunch of people can die.
You did two tours in Iraq. What was the weather report? Like the bad one? Like, was it, you know, 95 with a chance of sand and
when we were in Iraq, we were worried about Pittsburgh, the great magnetizing with all that steel. If you send a big magnetic field through Pittsburgh, they're screwed.
That's true, man. Too soon.
#. The great magnetizing of 24.
That sounds like a plot of like Fast and the Furious or something.
If we drive this magnet through Pittsburgh at 80 miles an hour, we just might be able to get $100 million.
I'll watch that movie.
I would too. I would absolutely watch. I bet it'd be really good.
Hey, did a Rams running back say something today that made the internet raise their eyebrow a bit? Hmm? Anything happened today? I was out.
Yes. John Kelly says he puts ketchup on his peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and it caused quite
a ruckus.
Patrick Mahomes liked that tweet, by the way.
Real quick, before we jump in.
That was not true, by the way. I don't want people hearing this and being like, what the heck? Oh, John Kelly, get the hell off my team.
John Kelly and his ketchup. Miles is all pissed off because John Kelly is not team mustard.
Before we jump into all this running back stuff, I want to just get clear of the idea. Like, I think I saw it thrown in an article today when they were talking about CJ Anderson, and even in Joe's article a couple days ago talking about CJ, that the idea that John Kelly is like not ready to play, and that's why CJ was brought in. My question is, where does Justin Davis fit in all of this? Is he just pretty much cut? Yeah. Is he like not a factor with his team?
Will play with Sean Mannion on the San Diego Admiral AAF team.
The fleet, Robbo. Show some respect, goddammit. Jesus Christ.
No, Justin Davis is on the outside looking in. That's just the way it is. He's the... Here's what I'd say. Here's how I'd put it. Justin Davis has the lowest odds of making it onto this team next year out of the entire crop. And that's without the possibility that we add a name or two over this offseason, whether it's late in the draft or UDFAs going into training camp.
Okay, great. So let's go back to CJ Anderson, because we could talk about his contract, but first we got to talk about the big thing, which he said in an interview today about Todd Gurley.
Yeah, CJ Anderson was on Undisputed, the Fox Sports show with Skip Bayless and occasionally Shannon Sharpe, Eric Dickerson. And Skip Bayless, only it was a shorter interview.
It's interesting because another part of Skip Bayless that I don't think people realize is that he sucks. And, you know, when you really look at that, he just sucks so much. And that every day he goes into work and he sits down and he finds a way to suck even more. And it's a testament to his work.
He works hard.
Because he does a really good job at sucking.
Part of it is the intention whoreism, but part of it is doing enough work that you can say that the work justifies the vapidity of the opinion. So it's kind of like, remember when Stephen A. did the thing about the Chargers, and he was like, yeah, Hunter Henry could be good this week. And everybody was like mad that, and he talked about a couple guys that were hurt, not even on the team. And everybody was upset saying like, why didn't you do your homework? And, sure. You know, it would have taken 30 seconds for you to learn that these guys aren't on the team, which exposes the whole fallacy. Why would you listen to anybody that only spends 30 seconds to learn what they're talking about? It's such a weird construct that, oh, I want to listen to somebody who has 30 seconds of expertise on the subject matter. But that's literally what people do. That's literally, they want to hear guys entertain them based on 30 seconds of research. It's a very, very perverse industry. But it works like that. It really does.
Yeah.
My wife gets 30 seconds of entertainment.
So yes. CJ Anderson was on Undisputed, talked about Skip asked him about the idea that Anderson might have been the better back down the stretch, and he deflected from that. He says, it's Todd's team. It's still Todd's team no matter what happens, even if I come back. I earned playing time. I learned in this league being 7 years in, you can earn opportunity, and I believe I earned opportunity, .. I mean, obviously, I'm not going 80 yards anytime soon. That's fine with me, but hopefully we keep Todd fresh so he can go. And so he just pointed out the idea that no matter how things ended, it was Todd's team. The bigger quotes came when Skip Bayless asked them about Todd Gurley's knee and the injury. And Skip Bayless asked him, how hurt was Todd when you got there? And CJ Anderson said, more hurt than what we thought. The injury was a little bit more than what everybody thought, including himself. Skip Bayless asked him, what would you call it, a sprained knee? And CJ Anderson said, you know, he would never really tell me. It was tough. I would say a sprained knee. Obviously, it's the same knee injury he's had before in his career. So obviously, I had surgery on my meniscus. And once you have a knee, you always have a knee. So it aggregates. And if he was getting a lot of touches earlier in the year, obviously him being one of the best running backs, that was probably the case. So just the quote saying the injury was a little bit more than what everybody thought, including himself, kind of took off. And that's the difficult part, because we just never got a good answer from the Rams, from Sean McVay, from Todd Gurley about his status. It's one of those things. We get a chance maybe at the combine coming up starting next week to get a sense of maybe what happened. Maybe the media presses McVay into a degree less need to try to get an injury, but I don't know that we're going to get much out of them, given the fact that they haven't given us the answers by this point.
Well, you know, a question I have just about knee injuries and what's going on with Todd Gurley's knee is that it feels like they could be caught in a situation where the knee is sound, that he can go to a doctor and they could say, hey, structurally, the knee is okay, and he could play. But when he actually gets out on the grass, he can't accelerate like he used to, and he's losing a bit of his quickness and effectiveness as a running back. So in one way, that's what you would expect. But it didn't seem like we were getting that product on the field that, you know, when he would play. I mean, there were a couple of plays where you kind of ran out of gas, but he still was putting up numbers. I think the questions that fans are asking isn't really why is he playing poorly, except for the drops, but just as like a running back, it was a more about why isn't he playing more.
4 carries in the NFC Championship, 3 carries in the first half of the Super Bowl. That's not normal.
Because you have to wonder, well, what would he be playing like with 20 touches? Would it be that you'd get hurt because his knee was just being strung together by a couple Band-Aids and some string? Or was this knee okay? He just wasn't that good, and McVay and the coaching staff was like, well, he's not going to be that good, so let's just put him out there as a decoy and don't really try to depend on him too much. That seems to be a little more the company line. There's just so little logic to it,
especially because the Rams, we know how good Todd Gurley is. The Rams made him the highest paid running back in the entire NFL. The idea that he's having a bad game, you don't just suddenly go to the backup, because you know who else had a bad game in the Super Bowl, Joey?
Yeah, my boy.
Yeah, Jared Goff.
My boy.
Yeah. You know what they didn't do?
Sean McVay?
They didn't just bench him. You don't just bench your best players because they're not playing well. You figure out a way to get them more involved and to give them better situations. You don't just bench him because CJ Anderson's there. That doesn't make any sense. And there's not a good explanation for it other than either he was hurt or there was some kind of disciplinary issue. And that seems even more far-fetched. The idea that it was a game plan issue, that either CJ Anderson was more applicable to their system or Todd Gurley wasn't playing well. There's no reason you bench Todd Gurley. You can't be that fickle with star players, especially those who have proven their capability on the field. There's no way that Andrew Whitworth has, you know, 2 bad series the way that Todd Gurley had a drop early on that created that interception against the Saints, and you just decide, oh, well, we're going to bench Andrew Whitworth and go to Joe Noteboom. Let's just see what happens. There's no way that happens.
No.
Well, I have a question about how they deal with this whole issue. And first of it is, question number one is, do you think the Rams actually know what the situation is with Todd Gurley's knee? Like, do you think they're confident on what they have in him? Because it goes to question two, which is, if they don't, is the whole CJ Anderson contract going to have to be put on the back burner until they know what's going on with Gurley?
It's a good question. What do you think, Robba? Do you think they have a sense of, or do you worry? Let me put it like this. Do you worry, given the way that CJ Anderson said it was worse than what they thought, do you worry that Todd Gurley's knee may be less reliable long term than what we might have thought 3 months ago, before the Philadelphia Eagles game, before everything became public about the Week 1 injury? And to Joey's question, how that might affect their willingness to re-sign CJ Anderson.
So he came out and said that he hurt his knee in the opener against Oakland, correct?
After week 15, correct. In December, week 15,
he said that he hurt his knee all year. Yep. I had put up 21 touchdowns with a bad knee all year. He was exasperated in that game where he did the other knee. I'm not sure if it was the same knee or not. We just knew that he had an injury. He played through it all year. He put up 21 touchdowns, was talked about as an MVP guy, offensive player of the year guy. Until that point, he fell off, where he either hurt that same injury, became worse, or he had a second injury that made it sit worse. Maybe it's both knees at this point. I don't know. I don't know specifics if it was the same knee, if it's a different knee, if it's just a worse injury from what he was dealing with all year or whatever. But am I worried about his knee? No. Now, that could be foolish. I could be, you know, laughed at, and that's fine. I'll take it. But, you know, he had the ACL problem in college. He bounced back, was rookie of the year. He was offensive player of the year last year, and or 2 years ago. Last year, he had 21 touchdowns. He's been pretty good. And, yes, we've seen a lot of metrics where it was the offensive line, and, you know, everyone was successful. Malcolm Brown was good with the Rams. CJ Anderson off his couch was good. Gurley was good. So, like, there could be some of that. And we'll find out this year if they have a lot of turnover, if everything falls off. Maybe it was all OAW and Roger Saffold. But we'll see. But am I worried about it? No. You know, they've been the healthiest team in the league the last 2 years. Everyone has injuries, but they really have been. And I think Reggie Scott does a very good job, and Ted Rath as well. But I think their staff is pretty darn good at what they do. Now,
Reggie Scott.
Reggie Scott.
It's going to be my new thing. We'll start talking about injuries and Todd Gurley's knee instead of doing Reggie. Todd Kelly. I'm going to be doing Reggie Scott.
Does Reggie Scott have just like completely alternative medicine? Is that why the Rams have been so healthy the last 3 years? As everybody else is like cortisone, and he comes in,
Mr. Miyagi.
I want you to put this stick of butter under your knee for the next 5 days. I'm sorry.
If it works, keep doing it. Get the crab boil up. Put it on the knee. You'll be fine tomorrow. I mean,
here's a cockroach. His name's Jeff. He's going to be your friend, and he's going to cure all of your illnesses.
Whatever they've done, I hope they keep doing it. Because he's been really good. We heard after the season that Gurley was not going to need surgery. It's just going to take care of itself. So I trust them until I no longer trust them, if that makes sense. There's so much we can worry about. It's that stuff that's out of our control. They said that he doesn't need surgery. I'm going to believe that 9 months of rest, he'll be all right. He'll be good to go.
Let me ask you a question real quick. Do you think that C.J. Anderson is going to be on the roster next season?
I do not. Ooh, I do not, and that's for a different reason.
Oh, which is?
Because the reason Joe pointed out in his outstanding article today, or was it yesterday?
He's too fat.
If you have – he might eat Todd Gurley's knee, and we can't have that. You put that Reggie Scott butter on there, it starts
looking like Hold on, Reggie Scott. If you're giving him a stick of butter for the knee, you need to give me one for the tongue.
No, I mean, if you have C.J. Anderson on the roster, it's no longer Todd's team. It has to be because you're paying him to be Todd's team. I mean, you have a guy out there who's outperforming him, and the specter will always be there. It's too easy for Sean McVay to go, well, Todd's not really feeling it. Let's get C.J. in there and we'll just go away from Todd. You're paying that guy that kind of money.
He's the highest paid running back in the NFL.
In the league. It's not even close. Lev Bell sat an entire year not making the money that Todd Gurley.
You convince me.
You can't have the guy out there who's going to be, putting doubt in his mind or coach's mind.
What's the Darren Rovell tweet? This is horrible for the country, but it's tremendous content.
I mean, it's great for us. It's great for Rams fans to have him back, but I don't think it's great for Todd Gurley and Sean McVay. So I think you let CJ go get that job with the Arizona Cardinals or whoever the running back. Right.
I think my viewpoint of Todd Gurley in the offseason is just going to be we have to just put our faith in the fact that got him on this contract. He could very well come back and be healthy and just needed some time for his knee to be okay. But there's also the sense now where could be a ticking time bomb where this injury could be nagging and it could just be a thing now. I know Los Angeles fans with the Dodgers have the contract of Darren Dreyfuss and Kevin Brown, where there's both with these 5-year contracts and they would get hurt all the time, just never could get on the field. And the team couldn't get better until these contracts expired. And I think football is a little bit better because you can just cut players. The guaranteed money is a problem, but not as significant as the prices that NBA teams have to play or even Major League Baseball. So with Todd Gurley, I just have to hope that he's going to be back and this is just going to be a blip. But crap,
You're going to be scared every hit. You're going to be scared every single hit on that knee.
Yes, scared every. It's going to take the fun out of being a fan of him, in one way, because you're almost like you're gritting your teeth the entire game. So
every player is one hit away. Like, I mean, Cooper Kupp.
But you know what though? I don't think you look at Tom Brady and do that. Him?
Not every player is the highest paid at their position with a previous ACL injury coming off of this narrative.
If anyone has an injury and then you worry about them afterwards, I mean, that's everyone in the league. Cooper Kupp, Tom Brady tore his knee out. I mean, were Pats fans going, well, maybe it's time.
Yeah, but then he came back. And I think right now we're looking at Todd Gurley as like a We're looking at Todd Gurley as like a Fabergé gay.
Yeah.
Right. So it's going to be that. It's going to be waiting for Humpty Dumpty to break.
Yeah.
Until he shows that, oh, maybe he's not going to break. Right. Until he puts up another year where he's great and he's healthy. And then that's like, oh, we'll forget about it. Just like you kind of forgot about his college injury, right? Oh, coming out of college. Right. Oh, ACL, what's going to happen?
Here's one note. Contractually, because of the extension that they signed Todd Gurley to, they can't get away from him for the next three seasons. He's locked up for 2019, 2020, and 2021. 2022, you could get out of it, but there would be a bit of a penalty. You'd have $4,200,000 in dead money, $10 million in savings. And of course, the problem is because he's the highest paid running back in the league, there's not likely to be a significant trade market, because if for whatever reason Rams fans and the Rams themselves are advocating moving on, that would suggest that there's not going to be a heavy buyer's market for somebody you're willing to move on from that's getting paid that well for a position that historically over the last 10, 15 years has not gotten that. So for better or for worse, the Rams and Todd Gurley are wedded together. When they made that deal, that was a good thing. And I think it's just one of those things where, whether it's recency bias or because of the importance of the postseason and the Super Bowl, we got a big question mark there. And that's probably the biggest question mark of the offseason, maybe going into training camp, although we have to see what happens over the next couple months. It's a little frustrating, but it is what it is, man.
And to be fair, I mean, this is happening around the league. Maybe it's not even – look at AB. What are Steelers fans feeling about, you know, Antonio Brown? He didn't get hurt. He just doesn't want to be there
anymore. How about the 49ers? And they got a quarterback and running back coming off of injuries.
Yeah. I mean, it's just our team, so we're having to deal with it. But it's nothing new. It's what we do in the offseason. We worry and we pick and we go after things. And with, you know, when you're paying someone the most at his position in the league, yeah, it's warranted. I'm not sure we're all crying that this is like over Morgan Fox and his knee injury, right? Well, no, Morgan Fox missed the entire year.
Yeah, but Morgan Fox is the highest paid sixth edge rusher on the depth chart in the NFL.
Right, totally. Yeah, totally. So, yeah, his price tag warrants the worry, so I get that. And he's going to have that over his head. He's not going to play in the preseason just like he didn't play in the last preseason. So we're not going to – we'll have to wait till September to see what we have with Todd Gurley. His last two games sucked, and now we've got to wait.
Yay, happy vibes. February 19th was the first day for clubs to designate a franchise or transition players. We're into franchise tag season, which is twofold. Will they tag somebody moving forward, and what will they do with their tagged player? Joey, where do you want to start? The tagger or the taggee? And I don't even know what that means. Do you want to deal with them tagging somebody now, or do you want to deal with LaMarcus Joyner, who they tagged last year?
I guess, yeah, let's talk about LaMarcus Joyner first, because I think that's an interesting subject, because everyone's really assuming that he's just going to be gone. That no one's really thinking of tagging him again or signing him to a long-term contract. And I think a lot of it is because he didn't play very well.
Not compared to 2017.
Which, you know, he played really good in 2017. You know, was it contract worries that he did something get in his head? Or because he was a starting slot cornerback under Jeff Fisher. So he was good in that role. He transitioned to safety. He was pretty good in that role. And then, boy, he took a step back. So was it a contract, or is it, you know, he's just not a good player now? But I'm with you, Joey. I don't think you give him.
It's worth pointing out that this is why a lot of players worry about the franchise tag. Unlike Trumaine Johnson, who got tagged twice, played through it and played very well, and got a huge payday out of it. LaMarcus Joyner,
yes. LaMarcus Joyner for 2 years.
Might have gotten a better contract after last season than he will this season, and that's the real risk. Mm-hmm. Along with obviously injury, is that going into a franchise tag, you have this high, obviously anybody who's getting franchise tagged is good enough to merit it for that team. And then if you don't play up to it, for whatever reason, you lose that market value. And that's a tough risk for players. I think the thing that's tough with LaMarcus Joyner is, you know, you think about a franchise tag, you're tagging out to be the top five at his position. Is LaMarcus Joyner a top five safety in the NFL? Because if he's not, then what you're talking about is giving him a significant pay cut And if you're coming to a guy at this point before free agency and talking about a significant pay cut, it's hard not to see how he goes to the market and says, okay, I want to see what I'm really worth, and that there are going to be teams that are more desperate than the Rams are to try to get a guy like that with the promise that he has based on 2017.
Okay, so that's my question with LaMarcus, is that, yes, he's definitely not playing like a top five guy, but that means his market value has, you know, been lowered. So there's going to be less teams that are going to be want to throw big time money at him. So is it, have the bridges been burned? Is that why everybody's so low on the idea of him coming back? Right. Because it's not that they can't afford him, because he's not going to be getting any offers from any other teams that would be like 2017 money for him. So it's just interesting why everyone's so negative on him.
I think it's just the competing priorities. The Rams have so many things that they need to address. And the idea that you would have to say in the problem with opening a guy up to the market isn't what the average team thinks he's worth. It's essentially what the most what you just need one to set the highest price. And that's the thing that's difficult, is if there's a team out there that thinks he's worth top five money, then that's his market. It may be like Sammy Watkins, when Sammy Watkins signed that deal with the Kansas City Chiefs, if you go and look at national writers, if you look at local Kansas City writers, everybody said, yeah, this is way too much for this guy. It only takes one team to be able to set the market for somebody, and that's all that matters.
Right. I worry about that with Corey Littleton.
Mm. Yeah, I think
there's going to be a team out there that's going to think that he's more valuable than we do. And I think the Rams really think he's valuable and they want to sign him. But if the Buffalo Bills offer him some top five contract, yeah, or whoever, you know, it could get kind of a bummer, because this guy has been a fantastic contributor to the defense this year. And I think he's been an undercover hero in a lot of aspects of the way that defense was playing, especially towards the end of the season. And I don't think Corey Littleton should be franchise tag level, but I also worry that he played a little bit above his market value towards this season. And I think, I wonder if the Rams were really prepared for that, or they're like, oh dude, we're going to pay.
Yeah. What's
guy.
Interesting is he's a restricted free agent. So unlike unrestricted free agents, which is like you can go all in on guys, just whatever you're willing to pay him. Restricted free agency requires you to place a tender on the guy. So the highest that they could tender him would be a first round tender, which we'll have to see what the numbers are. I think it's going to be the same, which is about $2.9 million would be a salary, but a team could come in and give him an offer that would be a higher salary, and the Rams would have to match that if they want to keep it. If they don't choose to do that, then they would receive that first round pick. That's the difference on the tender. It's going to be difficult.
Would you put a first round tender on him?
I wouldn't be opposed.
It seems cheap compared to like Mark Barron, right?
I wouldn't be.
And you recoup a first. Yeah. So
yeah, I wouldn't be.
He'll make more of that in his contract, but that doesn't sound like a bad deal for.
Yeah, the biggest I meant to write it by now, and I've kind of been delaying it until after the combine, but maybe I'll write it this week. Is the biggest challenge for the Rams in free agency this year with their own free agents isn't the top guys. It's not LaMarcus Joyner and Ndamukong Suh and Roger Saffold, specifically those three. What it really is they've got so many role players. And it's not the individual quality, it's the totality of it and the quantity that they're going to have to deal with. You've got, just on the outside, you've got Dominique Easley, Dante Fowler Jr., and Matt Longacre, along with Morgan Fox. On the inside, you've got Bryce Hager and Ramique Wilson. Remember, Bryce Hager was the number one special teams contributor in terms of snaps. You've got Sean Mannion, who's a backup quarterback. So don't even think about it as in terms of Sean Mannion, because obviously when Rams fans think about it, they're like, yeah, I can move on. You're talking about backup quarterback. Backup quarterbacks are extremely expensive if you want to pay market value for a guy. You've got cornerback depth and Sam Shields, but especially Troy Hill. Troy Hill filled in for Kayvon Webster last year down the stretch into the playoffs. Troy Hill filled in for Aqib Talib for, what, 8 games this year? That's not the kind of guy that just exists on your depth chart. That's a position that's gotten a ton of play over the last 2 years. So it's not so much just that the Rams you know, have these big name guys and Ndamukong Suh, Roger Saffold, and maybe to a lesser degree, LaMarcus Joyner that they need to address. They can do that. They've got draft picks. They've got some money they can spend in free agency. The problem is if you start saying, we got to bring back Dante Fowler. We got to bring back Corey Littleton. We got to bring back Bryce Hager. We got to bring back, Troy Hill. You start racking up these smaller contracts, even though the Rams have almost $30 million in salary cap. That money starts to disappear real quick when you start stacking up some of these smaller contracts.
Yeah, and it kind of comes down to the agents, and especially like a guy like Bryce Hager. You know he's not getting huge money, but he's going to want more money than he got last time. And I think the front office is going to have a challenge because you're right, man. The depth is going to be a really big storyline this offseason, guys.
Depth that plays. That's the thing that's key here. It's not just depth that's on the roster. This is depth that plays a lot of football. So if you move on from Bryce Hager, you've got to get somebody who can A, offer you the kind of expertise he has as a defender, but then you got to give John Fossil somebody to replace, not necessarily to replace his top special teams guy, because you know you can't give him a guy that's going to get the most snaps. That'll probably be somebody else that's already on the roster, but you got to give him a core contributor. If you give away from Troy Hill, you got to. Wade Phillips is going to say, okay, well now you have to give me a cornerback. I can work with the guys that we already have, but I don't know that you want to promote guys that you have on the roster to fill in for Troy Hill. Given the way people already feel about Troy Hill, think about the people that he beat out for that job for the third cornerback role. You can move on from with Dominique Easley, Dante Fowler, Ethan Westbrooks, Morgan Fox. If you want to bring in a new edge, that's fine. But the whole reason they brought Dante Fowler Jr. over in the first place was that Samson Ebukam and Matt Longacre weren't cutting it. So there's a lot of risks in terms of what they got with all these free agents. And that's a little bit different. And that's maybe what makes the franchise tag interesting is it seems like the one contender, and Eli wrote it for the site, was that it might be Dante Fowler Jr. What do you guys think about using the tag on Dante Fowler?
Can we just sign
him? That's a lot of dough.
There's no reason we couldn't.
You can.
But the same thing with LaMarcus Joyner or Trumaine Johnson.
Yeah, so is his representation just asking for just too much money and for what we're willing to pay for a long-term contract? Like he wants too many years or he wants too much guaranteed money?
Yeah.
Is that when the franchise tag becomes more desirable?
That
is because
he's a 25-year-old guy, right? So this is his make money contract in theory. Right.
It's two things. It's when you don't have a team in representation seeing eye to eye on the terms of contract, but also what the tag allows you to do, and this was clearly the case with Trumaine Johnson, because of what we did with Marcus Peters and Aqib Talib, we'll have to see how it works with LaMarcus Joyner, is it allows you to delay replacing a guy for a year. So that If when we were losing Trumaine Johnson, the Les Snead might have looked at the roster and said, look, I got to go get offensive linemen. I got to get wide receivers. I can't afford to also lose a cornerback and have to fill that in now. So with the safety last year, he might have been looking at this saying, look, I've made all these trades for the cornerbacks. I don't have any top draft picks. I can't afford to lose LaMarcus Joyner right now because I don't have any capital to get a safety. It may be one of those things, if they do tag Dante Fowler, that they look at it and say, look, I'm losing Ndamukong Suh. I'm losing, maybe one of these other offensive linemen. I've got to spend all this capital in terms of limited money in free agency and whatever I've got in the draft to fill in. I can't afford to also lose an edge rusher, because that gives me one more position that I got to fill. If I tag him this year, I can deal with it next year when I'll have more capital to deal with that position.
But is the intention that they're not going to – how often do they sign a guy to a long-term contract?
Infrequently.
Franchise? Right. So it just feels like you're just delaying this sort of departure.
That's it. Yeah, for sure.
But I want Dante Fowler Jr. to be a part of our future, guys.
Sorry.
His tag is what, $14 million?
Oh, edge would be expensive because that's a
– Right. It's $14, $15 million. And so if right now they're at 39, that's a lot of dough at a 30 million. Like you have a lot. Like you said, that's a lot to replace.
You know, Rabo, I forgot that we were all part of the cult of Ogbonnia Okoronkwo. And he's going to be our savior. Right. And he's going to be the future. And he's going to be a sack machine. So we just got to wait for him to turn it on.
And so now you're expecting Obanaya Okoronkwo. You're expecting Micah Kaiser to fill in for Mark Barron after you cut him to save money. You're going to expect Joe Noteboom to come in for Whitworth, who is going to retire. Who else? Allen is going to come in because Sullivan's going to retire. All these guys who, you know, didn't play and was voted the worst draft class of the year, all of a sudden they're going to come in and fill in at all pro levels?
The grass is always greener, so I get why people feel comfortable with the idea, the concept of promoting up the roster when you've got young talents that haven't played a lot. The problem is young talents that haven't played a lot don't always pan out, and that's just that's the risk. That's the risk.
It did with Corey Littleton.
It did with Corey Littleton. Right? It did with Austin Blythe.
Was around.
It did with Austin Blythe. It did. Did with Rodney McLeod.
It can happen. Yep, it can happen. But the thing is, they all don't happen.
Not all of them work. That's exactly right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
What you got, Joey?
So my take on Fowler Jr. is that he was a guy that Jacksonville kind of felt at some point of like, hey, we didn't hit with this number 3 overall draft pick, and we're going to trade him, get whatever value, but definitely didn't get, you know, third pick value. And
he was outplayed by Yannick Ngakoue.
Right, but when he played with the Rams,
so the Jaguars had a pretty strong depth chart at the way stronger than what we had. So they were in a position where they could move on and get a third round and a fifth round pick and feel pretty comfortable about it.
And I also, Joey, I think did he play better with his limited 6-game run or so with the Rams than he did in his entire Jag career? I might say he did. Towards the end, he was good. He played the run and pass equally as well. So I get the intrigue with him.
And that's the thing. So you have a guy that fits in your system. You got him.
And he's only 25.
You got him under his true value. So you got a little bit of a deal. And now we're sitting in a situation where we're just going to be basically paying a bunch of money to have him for only one season. I just think that that's not the smartest play here. I think if you got a guy that you got on a good bargain, that you should be smart about it and be like, hey, this could be a future edge rusher. He's 25 years old and he could be part of our rush attack. And I don't know, man. I don't think we should franchise tag him. I think we should sign him to a 3-year contract.
I would not be opposed to them doing just that. I would not hate that if they inked him. I was surprised to see how well he played the run. He was good. That Saints game, that guy, I mean, besides the hit on Breeze that caused the interception, he played his ass off. He was good, and he was equally as good in the Super Bowl. He was very good.
I think part of the problem with Dante Fowler Jr., whether it's because of his draft status or because the Rams are looking for somebody to step up at that position, is I think the expectations are a little unfair, where people wanted him to just be this boss that the thing is, he doesn't have to be. You don't have to have Pro Bowlers at every position. You can have guys that just kind of do their job adequately, right? And that aren't going to be superstars. And that might be Dante Fowler Jr. And I don't think that's a bad thing. And especially as long as you can get a guy that you can pay like that, I don't know why that wouldn't be something that they shouldn't do, because the thing to remember this year is what I was just talking about with all the free agents, the role players that they have to sign. You're not going to be able to get a bunch of top guys. The Rams can't go out and get like DeMarcus Lawrence or any of the top free agents. Even if you get just one, especially at a premium position, if you go out and get a top free agent, you're not going to be able to sign all your role players. You can't afford all those guys. They just don't
have, get more Sam Shields.
You're going to have to get a bunch of Sam Shields. You're going to have to get a bunch of Cody Sensabaugh's. You're going to have to get a bunch of guys just to fill out your roster, because they're not in position to get those guys. The other problem is, and this is one that I also need to write out, is, and this kind of leads into the draft strategy and to a degree free agency, is because the Rams have had all these trades where the trade for Jared Goff, they traded 4 picks essentially for Jared Goff. It's a little bit more complicated than that, but it was essentially the idea that they traded away 4 guys for one. Sammy Watkins, they traded away a draft pick for 1 year of a guy when the draft pick would have given them 4 years. Marcus Peters traded 2 picks. Aqib Talib traded two picks, and now Dante Fowler traded two picks. They've traded guys. If you shouldn't just look at the roster in terms of, okay, here's what it is now for 2019. Think of it in terms of a timeline. They've got this gap now where they should have had a bunch more players on these rookie contracts instead of just having two or three guys that are expiring, where Sammy Watkins came and played and left. Dante Fowler came and played and might leave. Aqib Talib is, you know, playing, and he'll be almost certainly gone after next year. They've got this gap in the roster timeline where they were supposed to have some young guys like an Obanaya Okoronkwo that they could push up into all these other role player positions that they don't have. And because those trades are still impacting what they have going into this year, not having a second round pick, having to give the third rounder to the Jacksonville Jaguars, you just don't have a ton of opportunity to be able to fill in those gaps right now. And that's going to put a premium on making some tough decisions.
And that's why we mentioned last week that they have to hit on this.
Pretty much have to.
They can't screw this one up, because in a couple of years, you're going to have a void that's huge. So yeah, they need to be good in the draft this year.
One other way to think about this, when we get, as of right now, we're on the hook for the 94th pick to go to Jacksonville, but we'll get that back when we get compensatory picks, which should happen later this week. When we get that back, we'll hold the 94th pick in the draft. That'll be in the third round before compensatory picks. Obviously, we also have the 31st overall pick, which means we have one pick in the top 93 selections in the entire draft. That's just not a ton of capital to be able to fill in the starting roles. Whereas Oakland, for example, has four picks in the top 35. And I think you're right, Joey, that's probably going to be the most sensible thing, is to find a way to trade back from 31. Because more than anything, you might need quantity as much as quality this year.
Yeah. And we don't have a second round pick, right? As you mentioned. So yeah, I mean, could you get two second round picks for a first round pick, or is that crazy talk?
You'd have to throw in something else with the first. You could throw in a day three pick with the first rounder.
No, not at 31. I mean, if you traded a top 10 pick, that's a different story. But at 31, you're probably looking a second and a late third or a fourth, right?
Right. So if you package your 31st pick with like a fifth rounder or a fourth rounder, you could get 2 seconds.
All right, guys, let's light the candles and start talking some mock drafts.
Oh, juicy. Look at that. Look at that twist of fate. Look at you.
I mean, okay, first round pick. Are you, how much of your day, Joe, are you thinking about who we should get with our first round draft pick?
I do usually two runs at mocks per day. The problem is, because I'm not very picky, is 95% of mocks, I see them and I see the Rams and I go, yeah, that's fine. I see this guy and I say, yeah, that's fine. I think maybe the most interesting one was the one from Mocking the Draft this week. My friend Dan Kadar over at MTD that had us taking Jeffrey Simmons from Mississippi State. One of the best talents in the draft. If he were healthy, he'd probably be a top 12 pick. But he just tore his ACL working out last week. What do you guys think? Would you be comfortable for everything we just talked about, Robbo, about having to hit in the draft, not having a ton of capital, needing to make the most out of this, would you feel comfortable about taking a guy that might not be able to play in 2019 the same way we just took Joseph Noteboom, Brian Allen, that didn't play, albeit this would be with the 31st overall pick in the draft?
Ooh, well, would I be comfortable if it's like a Simmons who is, you know, thought of as a top 15 pick and he slides to you because of an injury and you might get him back for the playoffs, but they won't activate him. So yeah, you won't see him until 2020. He'll be there at the new stadium. I wouldn't hate it, because at the end of the day, you need top talent. And it doesn't really matter how you get top talent. You need players. And so when we talked about all these guys come off expiring contracts, there's gonna be an age gap and a talent gap, whatever. Something like that would be nice to pair with Aaron Donald for a number of years moving forward. So if it means you have to wait a year for it, yeah, I'm okay with that. But again, they have to hit him as pick. So I don't care if they do that, they have to make sure he hits. You can't wait a year and then have him suck or not work out or whatever. You have to make sure that he is exactly what he as advertised. And how likely is that? How many first round picks flame out? Half? 65%? It's not an exact science. So yeah, it's a risk, but I would not have a problem with them doing that because it's a smart thing. Well, didn't the Eagles just do that with Jones, cornerback out of Washington a couple years ago? Now, they didn't use a first on him. I think they took a late second, early third on him, whatever. But he had the same thing right here. Late injury, first-round talent, slides way back. They grabbed him. He struggled a little bit this year, but you know, they were decimated injuries. So I wouldn't have a problem with that. I really wouldn't.
Here's a way to think about
I'm excited about another
I was just
going
to mention this, Joey, before you get your pick, is here's a way to think about Jeffrey Simmons and kind of the roster timeline that I'm talking about. You know who Jeffrey Simmons would be a replacement for? Would be Michael Brockers. Michael Brockers is going into a contract year this year.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You would have Jeffrey Simmons rehabbing his ACL, Michael Brockers in his final year in his contract. Michael Brockers would hit free agency a year from now, and you'd have Jeffrey Simmons coming back healthy for 2020. What do you got, Joey?
I like Jalen Ferguson out of Louisiana Tech, an edge rusher, because you know he's going to be undervalued, knocked down on drafts because he got in an altercation at a McDonald's his freshman
even got
year
the football,
of college,
right.
And that's the big before he even started football.
How goofy is that? How I mean, a freshman year.
He got charged with assault. It was on his police record.
It was a fight, right? It wasn't like...
It was just kids punching over some fries.
It was a dude. He got in a fight with a dude at McDonald's.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. Tyler Higbee got away with it.
He did.
Although he slipped as well, right? Was he thought of as a first-round talent, Joe, when he came out? Did he slip?
No.
Tyler Higbee?
No. Not that highly.
When he was drafted? Was he drafted where he was supposed to be? Did he slide because
a
of
little
his
bit
altercation?
I'd take a slide. I'd accept the idea that he slid a little bit because of it.
I don't think the NFL is really taking like one guy punching another guy at a bar as being the sort of like deal breaker.
Right.
If anything, they want details like how good was the punch? Did it land?
Exactly.
Frank Clark was a first round draft pick.
Did you fracture a knuckle?
What kind of combo? What kind of combination did you throw? So you weren't committed? We're moving on.
What kind of combination? But, I mean, honestly, Frank Clark was a first-round draft pick, and he had a domestic assault against him.
Jeffrey,
so but it just depends on
Jeffrey Simmons had a video before he got to campus where he was punching a woman that was on the ground, and they had to deal with that before he got suspended quite less than he should have by Mississippi State. But Simmons was a much higher recruit than Ferguson was going to Louisiana.
Who's the Bengals running back from Oklahoma State?
Joe Mixon out of Oklahoma.
Another one.
What you got, Joey?
Louisiana Tech. How many games this season would you say that you've seen watching?
He saw everyone.
Well, there's one that I would like to forget. Oh, man. That was
he saw eight. One in person.
September 29th. That was a disgusting football game. I saw four games this year from Louisiana Tech. I saw the LSU game. That was in week four. North Texas the next week. That was a very sad game that we can all forget. Mississippi State, that one was in November. That was a really good game for Mississippi State, but they were playing some of their best football by that point. That was either late October, early November. And then they played in the Hawaii Bowl against Hawaii and beat them. That's a tough bowl matchup to have to go to Hawaii and play Hawaii in the Hawaii Bowl. And they played pretty well. One thing to remember about Jalen Ferguson is he just had a stupid career that finished on a tear. He had 17 and a half sacks this year. He's the sack record holder, not in terms of the entire NCAA. There was a kid at Slippery Rock that has more sacks in his career, but he had 45 sacks in his career. He had 17 and a half sacks this year. He's one of those guys that would have been really interesting to see how he would have tested because of the fight at the McDonald's. He won't be at the combine, but he's an interesting prospect, no doubt. And obviously what the Rams need at the edge, depending on what they do in free agency before we get to the draft, Jalen Ferguson's going to be a guy that's going to get some attention for sure.
I was watching some tape, and maybe he won't be able to go. He might be drafted earlier.
He could, certainly.
Who knows?
Instead of Jeffrey Simmons, what about Dexter Lawrence?
Dexter Lawrence would be fantastic.
Guy, right? Big inside tackle.
Which, by the way, I don't know if you guys saw the story. If you guys saw the story about Clemson. So Dexter Lawrence got suspended for the playoffs this year for performance enhancing drugs. And Clemson came out afterwards and just kind of gave a oops, yeah, we might have put it in his lemonade. Sorry. Whoopsie.
What?
That's how he got to be huge. He's like a giant man, right? Oops. He's like 6'4 something, 488, 7 pounds. I don't know. He's a giant dude.
He's a fantastic talent. That entire defensive line with Cleveland Farrell and Christian Wilkins, they're absolutely incredible. But easily my favorite story coming out of the post college football season wake of everything that was going on was one of those. Oops, we didn't mean to. Here's Dabo Swinney. This is the story about asked if Clemson accidentally provided the players something they thought were okay, but contained the chemical Ostarine. Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a chance that it could come from anything. They're going to test everything, look at everything. That's the problem. If you look at this stuff, it could be a contaminant that came from anything, something that was cleared and not a problem, and all of a sudden it becomes there was something. Coach, that's word salad. What the hell did you give him? What did you put in his omelet? Come on, coach.
Word salad. Yums.
What are we putting on this omelet today, coach? Got put a little feta on there. We got a little hot sauce, and we got a little Demodrine. What's Demodrine? Don't worry about it. You won't even taste it. Go ahead. Put it in.
Exactly.
So good. We're going to get heavy on mocks. Obviously, we got the combine coming up, so we're going to get some more names coming up. The thing about the mocks is this is a weird – because the Rams are all the way back at 31, there's so much you could do. And because, you know, you're talking about any position on the defense could be addressed. Anything on the offensive line could be addressed. We've seen a couple mocks where the Rams take a tight end. There's not a lot that the Rams can't do at 31.
I had the run sheet up before my internet died, so I can still read it.
Oh, that's good.
That
was my story. I was reading the run sheet in Target. There I was, reading the run sheet.
Breaking the law.
With a jug full of CLR in my hand, I got to my truck, and I was like, man, why didn't I get a bag? That's weird. How? I've never done that. I've never not gotten a bag. And I just realized I just walked the fuck out. I just walked straight out to the truck, reading Joey's run sheet.
Nobody stopped you because you were owner, like a me. Boss.
Nobody stopped me. The little, what's the little thing? The little, what sound does it make when you shoplift? In my head, it makes a very different sound that I'm sure it makes.
The problem is it kind of sounds like all the other types of beeps that happen at a grocery store. So it's just like a beep, boop, boop, or a beep, 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 beep. And so you're like, it could be a forklift going backwards down the cereal aisle, or somebody stole. You know,